40 years after Switzerland gave women the vote. How did the right to vote impact on women at the time? And what does it mean in the fight for equality today? Also in the program.
Oh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Oh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. Eh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Oh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. Eh, mam, me donnez-moi les
haricots. We hear from Mama Rosin, the Swiss Cajun musician rousing audiences in Britain. Welcome to Swiss Info's weekly news program. Today's February 4th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jessica Dacey in Bern. 40 years ago, on February 7th, men finally granted Swiss women the right to vote in national elections and to stand for parliament. Women had been fighting for the right since the 19th century, and while parliament backed women's suffrage in 1958, the legislation still had to get the approval of voters, all men at the time. Propaganda against the idea said women had smaller brains, were prone to extremism, and if elected as politicians, would leave the cooking to men. Over time, women were granted the right to vote at local and cantonal levels, but it wasn't until 1971 that two-thirds of men agreed to give them full federal voting rights. Switzerland was 50 years behind the United States and 8 years after Iran. So what did the vote mean to women at the time? Swiss Info's Julia Slater looked into the issue and interviewed several women who voted for the first time in 1971. Julia joined me in the studio earlier and explained that it was a momentous day for some women.
It was interesting. Several of the women that I spoke to said they couldn't really remember very much about it, whereas others saw it as a culmination of things that they'd been fighting for and believing in for quite a long time. One of those was Ruth Spindon, who was in her late 20s at the time, and her husband was a very active politician who had been in favour of the women's vote.
On February 7th, only the men went to vote to decide if we could vote or not. I was so thrilled. It was really something. We then went in person to vote, naturally. It was good, quite ceremonial.
The picture wasn't all rosy, though. Some women were not entirely happy about the message that the feminists were actually sending in, pushing the vote.
Well, I think it's quite interesting because the Swiss are very proud of believing in compromise, and they don't like it when people are very strident. A few years before, there'd been a vote in 1959 where men had rejected women's suffrage, and this was blamed to some extent on one woman, one book. Iris von Horten was a lawyer who had written a book called Women in the Playpen, which was a very impassioned denunciation of the situation of women in Switzerland. And a lot of other women who were pushing for women's vote had been trying to do it in a very calm, measured way, not to frighten men. And so there's this tension between how do you get the message across? And it's not just in Switzerland. I mean, this is a common thing. If you try to put across a new controversial idea, if you don't push hard enough, people don't take it seriously. If you push it too hard, people are put off. It's always a balancing act. One of the people I spoke to was Lottie Reist, who was a school teacher at the time, and she was in her mid-40s. And I think she summed up very well this problem of how do you get the message across.
Irgendwo fand ich es sehr toll.
I found it great, really. But the women who were pushing for it really put me off. They were too feminist. I could see that there was a need for fighters, and I was grateful to them for doing it. But I really didn't like what these women thought being a woman meant.
And for those women who'd been used to staying at home, it was almost irrelevant for them.
Probably it was for some. But after all, you didn't actually have to go and vote. It didn't make voting obligatory. What perhaps I got, particularly from one woman that I spoke to, Janine Burgnecht, who was in her 40s at that time. She had four children. She was very much at home. She was worried about the message that women were getting. It wasn't so much the vote itself. It was to do with empowerment of women, telling women that there were other things in life apart from looking after their children and husbands.
Let's hear what she says.
You know, at the time, we had more children and enough to do. On the radio, there were lots of programs telling women they had the right to fulfill themselves and that they didn't have to be stuck in the kitchen the whole time. I thought that wasn't doing women any favors, because for those women who have to look after their children at home, it makes them feel bad.
So like some transitions, it was painful for some people.
I'm not sure how painful it was. It was probably painful for some men who saw their roles or thought they saw their roles as head of the family being undermined. But interestingly, all the women that I spoke to, whatever they had felt about it, whether they'd been indifferent or enthusiastic, all of them told me that once they got the vote, they made a point of using it and they always turned up at the polls afterwards. And another thing that's very interesting is that several of them told me, basically, that their children's vision of the world was much wider. Their children had opportunities that they hadn't had themselves.
That was SwissInfo's Julia Slater speaking to me earlier. Switzerland was virtually the last country in Europe to give women the vote. So is this a date we should be remembering, or should it be brushed under the carpet? I asked Josiane Grub of the Swiss Association for the Promotion of Women's Rights.
It's a very important date for women. The fact of being considered as an equal human being, a citizen. And I think women and young people shouldn't forget what it takes to achieve something.
She explained that since 1971, Switzerland has made progress in improving women's wages. There are more women at universities and in politics. Women now have maternity cover and are less discriminated against in the workplace. But they are still at a disadvantage.
Women have it harder than men in managing caring for their children and the lack of recognition by society of their proper skills. These skills don't pit them against men. They're complementary, and it's a shame not to make use of them.
That was Josiane Grub of the Association for the Promotion of Women's Rights speaking to me earlier. Today, Switzerland is one of the few countries with a majority of women in the top echelons of power, the cabinet. But gender inequality is still very much a problem. This year sees the start of a national research program to find out why. Over the next 2 years, 21 different projects will be looking into different aspects of the equality issue, such as women working in typically male-dominated areas like agriculture, and how gender identity is taught at school. The point is to gather empirical data and use it as a guide for government policies for the future. Yvonne Riagno of Bern University is coordinating a project on work inequalities. She explained that the program aims to be a precursor for change.
I think it's very important. National research programs, as you probably know, are the result of a political process. They emerge because there is a perceived need by politicians of some problem that has to be addressed in society. And there was another national research program, number 35, on gender, several years ago, I guess. But they realized that the gap still there. Women still earn less than men. Women are working in jobs for which they're overqualified and so on. So the old problems, many of them are still present, and that's why this national research program came up again. And they're hoping that this time they will be able to move beyond and have policies and programs which can help reduce inequality.
The program finishes in 2013, and you can read more about these stories in the Votes for Women dossier at swissinfo.ch. Now, Cajun band Mama Rosin is one of the few Swiss bands trying to break out of Switzerland and make a name for themselves on the British music scene. The group are on tour in Britain and have released an album on a British label. True to form, the Cajun trio play on guitar, banjo, melodeon, and washboard, and have a distinctive nasal delivery modeled on the genuine Cajun vocal style. They even claim to live in their own swampland, admittedly not in the Louisiana Bayou, but on farmland a few kilometers from the banks of Lake Geneva. SwissInfo's Andrew Littlejohn met up with guitar and banjo player Robin Giro and accordionist Cyril Yatarian before a sold-out London show to find out where the Cajun beat stems from.
It's between the blues, the folk, the country, the jazz, and it's specific tastes. And somebody who liked the blues wouldn't necessarily like the Cajun, but for us, we liked all those styles around, and once we discovered this precise style, we discovered it was influenced by everything. So for us, it represents all the music of the South, of the States.
And we thought, okay, so we can also put a bit of our music
from young European guy, and it means punk music, rock and roll music. And we just wanted to bring also that in that big gumbo.
There's a country music feel to it, but with the lyrics in country music, they very much touch on relationships and they're quite melancholic and sad. What are the lyrics like in the Cajun song? Are they about social situations?
Sometimes they do. Maybe that it's closer to the blues. They talk about drinking, women. It's often women who leave the guy and he's really sad. But the difference between Cajun and blues is the interpretation. Blues is often sad. And the Cajun, they have fun. The music is really happy, but the lyrics are really sad. So it's funny to bring this all positive energy when we say, but it's only sad songs. People
don't believe that.
It's funny.
The guys don't say, I want to complain myself about my sad situation. I want to shout it. I want to cry it. I want to make party with my sadness. And if they, I don't have enough money to put salt in my beans. And the guys don't say, I'm so sad, I can't buy salt. Something like this. He just say, oh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Oh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. Eh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Oh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. Eh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Eh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. Eh, mam, me donnez-moi les haricots. Eh, mam, les haricots sont pas salés. And it's joyful to say something sad, and we really like it.
There was something quite nasal about the sound that came out there. Where does that come from?
The singers sings in a really strange way. Because when you play without amplification in a juke joint and all the village come to dance, you have to shout and you have to be enough loud for the people around. So they think really high with a strange accent, strange, something really funny. And in fact, we try to imitate that, but it's quite natural for us now.
When I sing inside, like, hey, Monet, comment va faire? Oh, toi, woohoo! Something like this.
And I play more the old one. Oh, Jeter, what? Qu'est-ce que tu fais là, Monet? Gaster, petit frère, je peux pas comprendre ce qui se passe.
And people usually don't really understand or just get some words because we speak in this bench of old French mixed with English, etc.
Can you give an example of the old Cajun sound and the French language?
To say, I go there. In French, you say, je vais là-bas. It's really simple. But with the Cajun, you make a mistake in the French. You say, je vais. Je vais mon chemin. I go on my way. And you don't say, je vais là-bas. And it's really a good example. We have a song like this, je vais mon chemin.
Does the music transfer well from French into English?
Sometimes when we come back home, people ask us, how come a French singing band can do so well in England? You know, sometimes we play in front of French audience and they don't understand too. So the lyrics are really important to us, but it's the way we sing them. Lyrics are maybe a pretext to express a lot of feelings, and this has no language barriers.
Wraps up our program for this week. Go to swissinfo.ch to read more about these stories or to download this program as a podcast. Tune in again next week. I'm Jessica Dacey.